पाशात्यदेशतारिणि जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवी गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे एवं स्वचित्ते स्वत एव सिद्धा आत्मप्रियोऽतो भगवानन्ता तं निवृतो नियतार्थो भजेत संसार हेतु परमश्च यत्राम् Thus being fixed, one must render service unto the super soul situated in one's own heart by his omnipotency, because he is the almighty personality of Godhead, eternal and unlimited. He is the ultimate goal of life, and by worshipping him, one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence. We just recap the background of this verse. So this series of discussion or this series of instructions from Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit started with one question that is in second canto, first chapter, 22nd verse, wherein Maharaj Parikshit asks how and where the mind has to be applied, and how the conception can be fixed so that the dirty things in a person's mind can be removed. This is a very, very important question. It is about how to purify our mind. And Maharaj Parikshit is a pure devotee. So this question is basically for all of us, for the conditioned living entities. And this particular question, very few people, you know, get this kind of question in their mind, because generally we make to believe with our current educational system and, you know, whatever the situation we are in, that, you know, everything is fine. There is nothing dirty about, you know, mind. So it's okay. This is how we think, you know, how my mind thinks. So it is considered as very, very normal that we never think about any dirty things. So if anybody talk about dirty things, is considered to be something very negative. You know, you should be very positive about what you think. You know, this is the general understanding of our, you know, mind and how we see things. So here, the other side, the pure devotee, Maharaj Parikshit, he is asking this question. Of course, this is for the generations to come. And anybody who takes up the study of these transcendental literatures can get these kind of, you know, the situations wherein such elevated souls think of, you know, the purification of mind. And Maharaj Parikshit, you know, he got the darshan of Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, when he was in the womb of Mother Uttara, when Ashwatthama was, you know, releasing the Brahmastra, and Krishna personally came to save him. And this is his question. And for this question, Maharaj Parikshit answers by starting with, you know, how he should meditate. You know, the first question is, you know, where, how and where the mind has to be applied. So Maharaj Parikshit started with you have to sit, you know, how you should sit, and what should be the breathing process, and you should do pranayama, and then you should concentrate your mind on Virata Rupa, that is gigantic universal form. So this is how he started. And then he explains about various parts of this gigantic form. He starts with the feet, which is compared to the, you know, Patala and Atala, Sutala, Patala, various planetary systems, the seven planets which are below the earthly planets and seven above including Earth. So it goes up to, you know, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. Satyaloka is compared to the head of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he suggests, you know, this is how one can, you know, meditate on the, you know, on the super soul form. And this is how the Brahmaji also meditated. And then in the second chapter, this completes the first chapter of second canto. In the second chapter, it is mainly about the next level of realization. Like, if we have to compare the three stages of realizations of absolute truth, that is Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan realization. The first part is related to the Brahman realization, and the second part is Paramatma, Lord within the heart. The chapter's name is Lord within the heart. And wherein, so how you have to meditate, this process is what is explained. And in the next, you know, the chapters, what we are going to read, next chapter we are going to read mainly about pure devotional service. So this is how gradually Maharaj Parikshit is taken through various, you know, the realization, various stages of realizations by Maharaj, by Sri Sukadeva Goswami. And in Bhagavatam, there is one verse, that is in chapter, canto 1, chapter 2, verse 11. Vadanti tattva vidha tattvam yajnanam adhvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti sabhyate. There are three stages of realization, that is Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. And this is compared to, you know, the concentration or understanding of sunshine, that is Brahman, and surface of the sun or sun disk. It is for Paramatma and Bhagavan, the actual sun planet. So for Prabhupada mentions in the purport, the understanding of the sunshine is okay for the preliminary students, and then we can gradually study the Paramatma aspect, and the Bhagavan aspect is complete, because there we are concentrating on Satchidananda Vigraha, is the personal form of the Lord. So in Brahma Samhita we can, you know, Lord Brahma says, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. So this is the conclusion of Brahmaji. So this is the process completely explained. If we take this verse as individual verse, we may think that okay, we are supposed to, you know, to meditate on the Paramatma aspect of the Lord. But in you know, our parampara, it is directly the Bhagavan realization aspect. That is what we are practicing as a practicing devotees. So we don't really concentrate on either Virata form or the Paramatma aspect. And we study the Bhagavan aspect. And all the studies, all the literatures what we read, it's mainly concentrated towards this aspect of the Lord. And even we can see in the purports of Sri Prabhupada, Prabhupada emphasizes this particular point, so that at any purport if we read, we should not get confused, that even though if we just read the translation, sometimes we may feel that, okay, are we supposed to do this if we take one particular verse and if we concentrate on that. But Prabhupada makes it very clear in the purports that, you know, we are supposed to, you know, concentrate on the Bhagavan aspect. It is Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada refers to one Bhagavad Gita verse, that is 1861. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtati. Dhamayam sarva bhutani yantrarudani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing and wandering of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. And also in Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter, 23rd verse, it is mentioned, Upadrishtanumantacha Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara Paramatmeti Chapyutto Dehesmin Purusha Paraham. Here, the Upadrishta and Anumanta aspect of Super Soul is expected. Upadrishta is overseer, and Anumanta is the permitter. And this is the Super Soul, the function of the Super Soul. So we can see, the first is the body, then we have individual soul, and then we have Super Soul. So the translation reads, yet in the body there is another transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the Supreme Proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and who is known as the Super Soul. So this is really a transcendental knowledge. So if we see our educational system, or what we study about the body, you know, the body science is mainly the whatever the modern education gives us, like, you know, there are various branches of sciences, like, you know, about the biology, anatomy, and, you know, pathology, and, you know, or even small part of the body, there are big subjects and people study for many years, like, you know, neurology, about the nervous system, and then, like, you know, the small part, like even the, you know, the dental, the people study that subject for 5 years and pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for getting this education to know how to maintain the teeth. So, but the basic thing that, you know, our body, the living force, or if you ask about in we also see in the Dhyana Yoga part, wherein, you know, there is a life air which is taken from different parts, from the navel to the dhyanis can take it from navel to various parts of the body, and finally it comes out of from the head. So life air they discuss about, and also the soul and the super soul aspect is a subject which is widely discussed in all these Srimad Bhagavatam literatures, like Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. And this is the totally by paying even, you know, hundreds of thousand dollars, what we study is just, you know, some of the functions of the body or some part of the body, and we are very proud that we are specialists for that particular aspect of the body. So our knowledge of the whole body is a big question mark. And even about the body, it's a big question mark. If you see the current day, if we have any particular disease, then the treatment is given based on the symptoms what you have. Whereas, you know, the Vedic way of medicinal system, that is Ayurveda, wherein it is suggested that a vaidya or the doctor is supposed to see the patient, see his face, or at the maximum he can see his nadi, that is the pulse, and then the doctor should say whether this happens to you. At that time, when he questions this, you know, half his disease is cured. And this is how they are trained, and that is the science. Because people who practice this have to, you know, study they are very educated in the Vedic, the knowledge, and they are so sharp and so intelligent to observe a person's face and see just the pulse, and we know how many diseases we have today. And based on just by observation, if he has to treat the patient, so how intelligent that must be and how advanced that knowledge must be. And today, if you have a problem, then we tell all the symptoms and we get a medicine for each symptom. One or two types of medicine, then we go back with a big packet of medicine. by paying few dollars. Or sometimes, you know, if we end up with really bad karma, then we may end up with some doctors who will ask us to go through all scanning and all kind of tests. And after test, they find that they don't know what the disease is. Then the experimentation starts. So this is the current day advancement compared to what is given in the, you know, in the scriptures. And the scriptures give a very detailed account of, you know, how the body functions, how the consciousness, how, you know, what is the function of mind, and how, you know, how one should control the mind by its intelligence. So these aspects are all we can study in these transcendental literatures. And the next point the Prabhupada mentions in the purport is every living creature is engaging in the service of something else. So, except, you know, the concentrating on the super soul aspect or concentrating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we are busy in something else. Conditioned soul under the influence of illusory energy, Maya, seek the service of something else. Conditioned soul works in the service of the body, or bodily relatives like children, wife, necessary paraphernalia for maintaining the body and bodily relations. And how people spend their, you know, which we can see, you know, the how people spend, particularly, you know, it is good to analyze how we spend the weekends actually. Okay, in case of devotees it is a bit different. We have various programs to attend. But the generally, maybe before we coming to, you know, coming into the association of devotees or the people in general, how they spend. I was just thinking, you know, I was just calculating how many hours we have from the time we, you know, maybe people who are working for 5 days, you know, from Monday to Friday. So if we are out of the office at 7 o'clock in the evening on Friday, so then till 7 o'clock in the morning on Monday, so how much time we have? And this time is amazing. We have 60 hours. And whereas, you know, the MOM guideline for working hours is around 44 hours, 45 hours, the standard guideline. So we have much more time than that, you know, during this period too. And what we do actually, what people do in general during this time. Friday, they are very busy searching for something, you know, some various places of, you know, some eateries, or different people have, depending on their propensities, different programs. So Friday they are very busy, and then the Friday, you know, they indulge in so many things, and it is very difficult for them to get up on Saturday morning. So sometimes many people get up directly for the lunch. So this is how the day starts. This is how then somehow, you know, then okay, then they may have some hungry by then, and then they have something, some food, and maybe some time is spent on some activities like, you know, watching television, or, you know, going out somewhere and doing some work, and then the, you know, Saturday is over, maybe buying something or maybe going to shopping malls. There are so many places, so many things to see, so many things to buy. And then the Sunday the same thing, or Sunday we feel that, you know, we have to energize so that, you know, the Monday onwards we have to go to work again, we need a lot of energy. And sometimes, you know, it is going in relaxation or going out somewhere, or, you know, somehow the time is spent, the 60 hours gone. And then the Monday morning, with all the so-called relaxation and, you know, keeping ourselves comfortable and entertainment, recreation, are we really fresh? You know, my experience is that, you know, the most of the times, so Monday morning I get some SMS. Sir, very severe fever. Or, you know, it is very, every time it's a different, you know, type of disease. And And with you know, after reacting for 60 hours, you end up with disease. We have to really watch, you know, what are we doing actually? Are we really relaxing or we are, you know, what are we doing? And then, many people blame the weather. Weather is very bad law. Because, you know, we just forgot what we ate and what caused these diseases. And then, you know, either we don't want to get up on Monday morning or we really have disease. If we spend too much of time in the shopping malls, definitely we may end up with many diseases if we spend too much time. Because, see the air conditioning system which is installed in these, we find very cool, very nice. The moment we enter, many people want to be inside the shopping mall because it is very cool, very nice. They can roam around. But to maintain this coolness, the air circulation, because they cannot afford to bring in fresh air all the time, so they have to circulate the air within. And in that what happens is everybody is breathing and so many people are carrying the disease from the previous week. So, and because, you know, every cough we release so many microorganisms and that can cause disease. Sometimes you must have experienced, I do have experience, you know, somebody, you know, coughs you just in front of you, sometimes next day you immediately catch. So this is the condition and wherein everybody is, you know, breathing, you know, maybe having different kinds of diseases, and we are cramped in that area and we feel nice, cool, because our body is cool. You know, it's cool atmosphere, and people spend, and then we end up with the miseries. And it is the only one who is inclined to this kind of scriptures, his mind is open, he can think of these ways. Otherwise we feel this is how the life is. And our scriptures give very nice, you know, solution for these kind of things. Like, you know, there is one verse in Bhagavad Gita 6.17. Yuktahara viharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta sapnava bhodasya yogo bhavati dukkaha. Yukta means regulated. Ahara is eating. Vihara is recreation. He who is regulated in the habits of eating, sleeping and recreation and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. So we have so many such formulas which are in the scriptures. We have to just see and we should try to follow. And the system of Bhakti Yoga is not like any other yoga system wherein you have to force yourself to follow these things. The process is so simple that we need not to concentrate on what we have to, you know, it is just the process of chanting itself is revealing us, you know, all these necessary knowledge for living a happy, comfortable life. Even though this material world is called Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. And the process is like, you know, the chanting of the holy name. And as far as ahara is concerned, so what he suggested is only take the food which is offered to the Lordship and which can be very simple food. It is not necessary for us to search for the so many varieties of food. Sometimes it is called, some people call it exotic foods. It's all, you know, various kinds of animals which nobody eat. You find, you know, somebody comes out with some idea that we can eat this also, still we can be alive. So then that is called as exotic food and people end up with those kind of food. And then in the verse it says that it is the practicing the yoga system. And yoga word today, it is today in the most of the yoga societies what they conduct, it is completely a mockery of yoga. Because in the yoga system what is suggested is, it starts with yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. This 8-stage yoga system where it starts with yama, niyama, the do's and don'ts. And if the yoga societies they start talking about do's and don'ts, the immediately the enrollment will stop, and whoever who is already attending, they also may not come the next day, because if this is the process, and the main purpose of yoga is you know, like for slimming, or maybe for taking care of some of the diseases, or just to digest whatever we want to eat or drink. So this is mainly used for digesting the thing. And what is going to be the end result? With this kind of yoga, we become a more stronger demon after practicing this yoga, because we are able to eat and digest anything and everything. So this is the result of the current the yoga system what is followed. Whereas in the scriptures it is very clearly mentioned that yoga means it is concentrating on the Vishnumurti form. It is a four-handed form of Vishnu. So that yoga, the Ashtanga yoga also is suggested. So this is what we should concentrate. And for coming to that stage, you need Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama. That is like, you know, our regulative principles. And without this, if we practice yoga, we end up with committing all sinful activities. And it gives a lot of strength to commit sinful activities. And then the Prabhupada also mentioned about house, land, you know, where we spend our time. Like in, you know, as far as house is concerned, of course, in land, Singapore, there is no worry, because the land does not belong to anybody. So it belongs to the state, so we need not worry about land, it is only house. So house, you know, the expectation, you know, people are not satisfied with what they have. So from, you know, maybe two bedroom to three bedroom to executive condo, executive or, you know, apartments to condo, and there is endless, and people feel, you know, they are not very comfortable. And the people go from one place to another place looking for happiness. Like, you know, people from countries like India and maybe Indonesia, Malaysia, and many parts of the world, of course, if you see every country that way, they think that, you know, the other country is better than this country. And even in the, you know, the so-called developing countries or underdeveloped countries, they look at the so-called developed countries, or more degraded ones. So, and these people, they have advanced, you know, the so-called developed countries, they are very advanced in exploitation, and they want some other different markets. So they look at the developing countries, because there is nothing much to exploit now, because already it is saturation point. And they come back. So people go from one country to another country, you know, like we all are here. So, but for devotional service, no place is really bad. Because if we understand the literatures, it is under any situation, it is not necessary that we have to change the circumstances. Under any circumstance, we can perform the devotional service. And it is not necessary for us to really change the situation. So I was discussing one person, and he was, you know, talking that he want to go to US. You know why? He says that in Singapore we cannot afford car. In US, you know, it is 2 months salary we can buy a car. And you want to become a driver there. Here you have a very comfortable situation, somebody is driving for you, so nice, public transportation system is there. So, but you know, just to fulfill the potency of driving a car, so person want to go to US. So these are the kind of, you know, the propensities that is mainly coming out of the qualities of mode of passion and ignorance. And people end up putting so much of effort to meet these expectations or these things which come to their mind. And as far as Prabhupada also mentioned about the wealth, if you see, it is an unending target. Maybe if you look at our life, maybe people who are maybe a middle age or who have you know passed the middle age level may think that, you know, okay, if we have this, then okay, then we can, you know, really, maybe we can, you know, devote our life for devotional service full time. But Krishna must have given that already. But by then we have further questions. You see, now the interest rate has come down completely. And there is no value for, you know, whatever you keep. So you don't know what happens. And, you know, healthcare costs have gone up so drastically that whatever we have, if we end up with one disease, then finished. Whatever we have is finished. And that is the situation. So we never come to a stage where we can say, okay, now this is enough. We can see many people who want to take retirement, but people don't want to take retirement because after that what? If anything happens? And even if they take retirement, they don't know what to do. And we can see many people who are just, you know, looking for that last day to come. Because it is completely blank, because they must have struggled a lot toward their life, and they must have earned a lot of money, and they may have children who may be busy in their own world and with their own commitments, so called. And then at the old age, because they lack the knowledge of this human form of life, what is meant for, so they end up with just miseries. And they just look forward to that last day to come, and in miserable condition they leave their body. Here, you know, in the series of verses, Sukadeva Goswami mentions that, you know, how one can live a simple life. You know, whether the trees have stopped giving fruits and so many things, you know, whether there is no cloth on the street, and it is for the renounced order, and it is not necessary for us to depend on the materialistic people for our maintenance of our body. Whereas even when we have earned, when we have, you know, the fair amount of wealth or whatever to take care of our body and the soul, and to, you know, so it is not necessary to go for over endeavor. And many people, even not only this, you know, the taking care of, you know, the family and this thing, society, and they just waste their time, you know, like, you know, taking care of some pets, the dog and some, you know, the various kinds of pets. And some people, they waste their life, you know, instead of surrendering to the Supreme Lord, they just surrender to their so-called boss or the client or to their profession. And people are engaged 24 hours trying to please their bosses, thinking that, you know, he is everything. He is treated like a demigod. He is the one who can, everything is in his hand. It is not that we need to neglect them, but it is not necessary to surrender unto the fully to, you know, these kind of positions, because Krishna is in the heart of every living entity, and whatever we are supposed to get as per our quota, we do get it, and it is not necessary for over endeavor. And it is very easy to say sitting here, but it is very difficult to follow. Even after we, you know, coming into the practice of devotional service, so constant monitoring or, you know, constant introspection is required to understand where are we going, whether, you know, our devotional service is increasing day by day, or whether it is getting deteriorated, or we are getting engaged in too many activities. the material activities. And really we can release Krishna consciousness when we find that, okay, whatever we are doing, maybe we must have started just by attending the class, and then maybe one round, two round of chanting, three rounds of chanting, and some, after that some reading, and then maybe we must have reached 8 rounds, 10 rounds, 16 rounds, and then we must have taken initiation, and then, you know, we may be spending some time on deity worship. So as long as we continue to increase the time and the concentration on devotional activities, it will be blissful. But the moment we, you know, try to see that, you know, okay, now we have this, and then sometimes the material demands increases, or maybe we think that, you know, okay, you know, we need to have this also, that also, and then if our devotion, there is a reduction in our service, and then, you know, we may find that a lot of, you know, it is not a very comfortable situation. As long as we continue to progress, it is wonderful. And it depends on how much we can get involved to that degree. Like, you know, in Bhagavad Gita is the verse, Ye yathamam prapadyante tam satayo bhajamyaham mama vartman vartante manushya partha sarvashaha. To the degree we are ready to surrender, to that degree we can get the mercy of the Lord. And and in one of the verse, Sukadeva Goswami mentions about Atma Tattva. And today, you know, there's very few people who ask questions about the Atma Tattva, about the soul and the super soul. Otherwise, the time is wasted on various other activities. And the next point in the purport, it mentions about the search for real happiness in life. And Prabhupada gives the example of searching for water in a desert. The foolish animals search, you know, they see the mirage as water, and then they, you know, run after that. But water is there, but it may not be in the desert. So they may have to go to different place or the sea or ocean where they may find water. So likewise, so real happiness is not just in fulfilling our material desires. And this material world, sometimes we blame this material world. But this material world is perfectly created. So there is absolutely no flaw in this material world, because it is meant for a specific purpose. If you see Ishopanishad, you know, the invocation mantra says, Purnath, you know, Om Purnamada, Om Purnamidam, Purna Purnam Udachyate, Purnasya Purnam, Adaya Purnam, Ivavashishyate. So, here, the personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And because He is completely perfect, all emanations from Him, such as the phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete whole. Whatever is produced of complete whole is also complete in itself. Because He is complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from Him, He remains the complete balance. So, this material world is created to fulfill various propensities that we have, and to come out of this, the cycle of birth, death, old age and disease. And for that, this is perfectly suitable. But when we try to enjoy in this material world, then we end up with miseries. So, like, you know, if you take the example of the various places in the world, the facilities are there. Like even in Singapore, I was just going through the statistics of places of worship. How many places of worship are there? I could see, I was just counting, and it was, there are more than 200 Buddhist Chinese temples, and there are more than 300 churches, and there are more than 60 mosques, and there are more than 25 Hindu temples, there are more than six or seven Gurdwaras. So many places of worship in such small place is really amazing. But, and also there are so many the places for recreation. So it is up to us where to go. And what is the purpose of these places? That is also important. Like Prabhupada mentions that Lord is within the heart. It is not, that Lord is within the heart and we can meditate. And that doesn't mean, Prabhupada also clarifies that we should not go to temples, churches and mosques. In the purport, Prabhupada clearly mentions. Because these are the places of worship. These are for, the science of devotional service. And in this material world, wherever we go, it's not only this planet, from the topmost planet to the lowest planet, we can find these miseries, fourfold miseries. Bhagavad Gita 8.6, the Lord Krishna says, Abhrahma bhuvanal loka punaravartino arjuna mam upetyatu kaunteya punar janmana vidyate. From highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery, wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. So it is very clearly mentioned that forget about going to the so-called developed part of the world. It is any, even if you go to different planets, the miseries of life within this material world, that is from lowest planet to the highest planet of Satyaloka, that everywhere the fourfold miseries, that is, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi, the birth, death, old age, disease, this is common. And there are other three miseries, that is Adhyatmika, Adi Daivika Tapa, Adhyatmika, Adi Daivika and Adi Bhautika. Like one which is misery is caused by our own body and mind, that is Adhyatmika. And then Adi Bhautika, that is the misery is coming from other living entities. It can be some virus also, or maybe our neighbor, or very dear ones also. It is from other living entities. And then Adi Bhautika, Adi Daivika. Adi Daivika is the various natural disasters, cold, heat, or maybe tornadoes or earthquakes, so many things. So wherever we go, we may end up with any of these miseries. And depending on the karma, we have to go through this. There is no option. There is no running away from this. If we have to go through, because of our bad karma, we have to go through that. There is no escape from that. And all the problems, last week, Devakananda Prabhu was very nicely explaining, and very nice point was polluted aim of life. What is our aim of life? That is very important. And it is because of our influence of mode of passion and ignorance, we have polluted aim and end up with miseries. That there is no escape from the miseries. And then Prabhupada comes to the next point, when these temples and place of worship, when the performances are not properly, done, then the people, when it is supposed to give sufficient knowledge to the people. It is not just, the temple means you come and you just ring bell and then, pay some money and just go away. It is, the temples are supposed to give transcendental knowledge to the people, to the devotees. And when that is not there, many people lose interest in going to these places. And then, you know, so that when there is no temple worship or when people stop going to temple, then it is, you know, giving rise to godless civilization. And when there is a godless civilization, then the foolish leaders take over that place. The foolish leaders of godless civilization try to devise plans to bring peace and prosperity in the godless world under the patent trademark of materialism. People elect incapable, blind leaders who are incapable of offering any solutions. But sometimes we see, you know, we find that if, you know, some country, some place, if they have a nice system of selecting their future generation of leaders, we are very appreciative of that. It's wonderful, you know, very nice system. But whether whatever education we give today, is it sufficient to maintain this place or to you know, to bring happiness to the place? Only they can come out with complicated solutions for the simple problems that we have. And that is what so-called the intellectuals or the scholars of today can give us. And in some places, it is not even elected representatives. Somebody comes up and he just takes over one fine day. You know, there are many cases in many countries it happened that, you know, maybe the head of the state must have gone on some tour, and by the time he returns, he gets a message that already, you know, there is a military coup and somebody took over already the seat. And these kind of things happen. So, and it is all because this is a godless civilization. And in the past, if you see the same situation, if we go back to history, we see what happened when, you know, the Vena was born. Vena was the king of, you know, son of Anga. Anga was ruling the world properly, very nicely, and he was not having any child, so he wanted to beget a son, and by the mercy of sages, he got a son by way of, you know, Vena. And Vena was very, very cruel from the birth, you know. And he started killing his, you know, the playmates and, you know, everyone. And he used to go to the forest and everywhere, kill innocent animals. And he was, you know, completely, you know, doing a havoc. And when his father saw that, you know, this son is becoming like this, and he thought, and he mentions in one of the verses that it is good to have such bad son than having a good son, because now it is the time for me to retire. If I would have had a very good son, then I would have attached to my family life and I would have stayed here forever, considering that this is the best place. Like we all think that this is the best place. So, and he thought, you know, he immediately decided that now this is an opportunity for me to leave everything. And he just left to the forest. At that time people used to leave to the forest. And it was accepted that after you cross a certain age and you are already into the, you know, the vanaprastha or sannyasa order of life, you can go. And it's a proven process, like brahmacharya, grahastha, you stay in the grahastha life up to the age of 50, and after 50 you get into vanaprastha and sannyasa. This was very, the proven path. It is not anything just, you know, it will not be considered that, you know, person just absconded. And today if anybody lives like that and is considered that, you know, he just ran away, and it is considered a big surprise. But at that time it was accepted that, you know, okay, he is into vanaprastha life. It is the lifestyle at that time. So he left, and after that, then when there is no king, then all the rogues and all the thieves that takes over the place. At that time the sages and the intellectuals at that time, they saintly persons who were guiding the king Anga, who decided that at least we should have something for the time being. They try to, you know, preach or try to educate Vena before, you know, making him a king. And there was so much of opposition. Many people said that, you know, the ministers didn't accept. They said that, you know, we cannot have this kind of person as king. But the sages decided at least we should have somebody, you know, they tried their best and then coronated him as king. And he continued with his, you know, the fulfilling sinful activities. And then the sages realized that now is the high time that we have to stop this. And then they try to, you know, convince him that you should not be doing this. So at that time, King Anga started preaching back to the sages. Very nice teachings of King Anga. Like, you know, the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj and all we see. So there are some words wherein Anga says, you know, the king is the head of the state. He is like God. You should worship him. You cannot be just, you know, just teaching your own ideas. And then finally, you know, the sages decided that this person is not going to change. They just cursed. And at that time, the sages and the brahmanas were so powerful. Just their curse is enough to finish a person. And immediately he was killed. Just by the curse. It is not required for them to use any weapon or anything. So that was the power of brahmanas and the sages in those times. So, so then of course, then the story continues, and after that, so they wanted to have a king, and then, and because, you know, they churned his body to, the next Prithu Maharaj, and Archi was born of his churned hands, and before that there was a demon was born from his leg. So then the story continues. So the point is, in those days, in the history, we can see that there was a perfect, you know, check and balance. If the king acts in a proper way, it is nice. Otherwise, the sages and the brahmanas were there to ensure that the proper ruler, you know, take the reign and he managed the affairs. And in today's situation, that is not the case. Because we can see the rogues and thieves everywhere. Leaders themselves are becoming rogues and thieves. It is like, you know, if you have a fencing to watch your, you know, the land, the fence itself come and, you know, eat the grass. Then how? What protection we can expect? And we have classic examples of kings and ministers from the scriptures and from the recent histories. Even if you see the case of Chanakya Pandita was a great king. He was a great minister. He was a brahmana, and he was living such a simple life. So there was the Chinese, I think it is the visitor, who came to study this place, and you know how this is run and how is this lifestyle, you know how intelligent he is. You know, today also Chanakya's Arthashastra, it is studied by many universities. There are a lot of research work people carry out, and they take something, you know, trying to take something from there. There is a lot of principles which is compiled by Chanakya. And his lifestyle, he was so simple that, you know, the Chinese, I think it's Xuan Sang or somebody, who was studying, and he was observing what is his lifestyle, you know, how he manages himself. And he completes his duty, and he was observing from a distance, you know, at what time he go to work, at what time he go back home, and where he stays, and all those things he was studying. And then he saw that, you know, after leaving the work, he go to his house, and he, you know, he was lighting a lamp, and you know, it was dark, and he was doing some work. And after some time, he lit another lamp, a small lamp. Then he start his work, and the big lamp he you know, put it off, and then, you know, he start his work. At that time, this person was curious, you know, why is it so? He was working with that big lamp, and after that now he put it off, and he continued to work. he was writing something. So at that time, he knocked the door and he asked him, you know, this person was staying in a small hut actually, outskirts of the palace. He was not even staying in the palace. He was just staying on the outskirts and in a small hut. And where he asked him that, you know, you put off that, you know, big light and then your small light. At that time he said that, you know, the big light, it is for, you know, I was doing the king's work, you know, the state work. So it is paid by the king. So I was using that lamp and now I am writing my personal things. So for this, I cannot use state's money. We just compare in today's situation. And in different part of the world, wherein we find that, you know, the good governance is there, excellent governance, very nice. You just see who is the person who is highly paid in the state. And these are the administrators. Because unless you pay so handsomely or so big salaries, nobody is interested in serving the society. And the service to society by different ways and different charities, it is more of a show than real, you know, from the heart. Like a lot of people are interested in serving society and they want to, many cases, they want to show that they have a concern for the society. And the many people, you know, the social relation that we have, it is basically to show one another's opulence, you know, some people, like, you know, sometimes we call devotees, you know, please come, you know, we have this wonderful class, you know, we can understand Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, wonderful scriptures, and you attend a class, and people say, you know, they don't have time. And many a times, and many people, you know, they engage in so many social activities, so-called, you know, like you call him to your house and you go to somebody's house and, you know, and one full day is wasted in that. And what you discuss is, what you do is, the conversation is basically one trying to impress other. That's all. And when you find that, you know, other person is, there's a big gap between, you know, the way you can impress. And if it is in the same level, you continue with that person, or then you find that, you know, your relation is out. Because we understand that any relation without Krishna being the center, that relation cannot last. Even the relation within the house, like, you know, there's a saying that family which prays together lives together. You know, so it is very necessary to make our life the Krishna centered. If you see older civilizations, if we go back to history, maybe 100-200 years also, in most part of the world, you know, the biggest building in that town is either a church or a mosque or a temple. It is not the some other building. And now if you see different part of the world, the temples and the worship place of worship are moving to some remote corners. And the big buildings are for showing the opulence of that particular place. A few weeks ago, I was visiting, Taiwan. So where our representative took us to one place, one big building. It's a Taipei 101. It is 101 floor building. It is one of the building which is having highest number of floors. And took us there. Okay, fine. So I thought, okay, this is the biggest building. Okay, he's taking us anyway free of charge. He's paying for that. Fine, it is no problem. So then we went and he took us to 89th floor. And in 89th floor, there is a big observatory. They made full floor is observatory. There they give you some gadgets to see, you know, what all things you can see at that height. Different, you can see the whole city. And they, you know, that says that you come to the north, now you are moving to the northeast, and there is a running commentary you just put, and then that tells, you know, this building you can see, that building you can see. And to balance this building, you know, they took us to a place wherein there's a big steel ball at 89th floor, which weighs 660 tons. And this is just to balance the upper floors from 89 onwards. And this is a design by a, you know, specialist architect who can do this, a structural engineer. and the upper floors were all suspended on this ball. I don't know how it was designed. So can you imagine, it is like a standing like a stick, this building, whole building. And at 89th floor, there is this big steel ball of 660 tons. You know, one big truck is around 20 tons. So you can imagine how many trucks load of the steel they must have transported to 89th floor. And there they constructed this, they transported the strips and then they constructed the steel ball to balance the upper floors. And they also show, you know, how when the wind comes, how the building is moving, and still it is not falling, you know, it is still in a still condition. So, and you know, where are we using our intelligence? If you see closely, you know, these are buildings, it can become target of any terrorist activities or any your neighboring country. So this is where all our intelligence is used. In the past, you know, if you see, if the tallest building is a temple, you just remember the Lord, or at least whatever demigod you worship, at least you remember them. Or if it is a mosque also, okay, you know, you are remembering the Supreme Lord, ultimately. So, but if you see this building, you may have more fear, you know, when is going to this building is going to fall down. And if, particularly if you have seen that steel ball of 660 tons, you may not get a proper sleep, you know, anytime. If there is any, if you see in the news there is some political instability or something is happening, then immediately, you know, you may leave that place. But anytime this ball can fall down. So this is material civilization. This is where all our intelligence, all our technology is used for. And we can see the classic examples of various other the kings in the past, or Mahajans. We can take the class, you know, case of Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev was such a powerful person, and it was, if he was interested, he would have taken over the reins, but he took a very strong vow to his father that, you know, he is not going to become a king, but he was ruling. And he was so powerful warrior. And when during the time of Mahabharata war, at that time it was few days already passed. At that time, one evening, Duryodhana, you know, talked to Bhishma, and he says that it appears that, you know, you don't want to, you are taking side of Pandavas. You are just fighting just for the show. You are you know, heading our side. But it appears that you have lot of affection for these Pandavas, and you don't want to, you know, finish them. So it is not good for a, you know, warrior like you, for a Kshatriya like you. At that time, he takes the vow and he says, yes, now you see, I am going to finish them by tomorrow. And he keeps aside 5 arrows for 5 Pandavas. And then he hand it over to Duryodhana. Okay, these are the 5 arrows, hand it over to me tomorrow morning. And at that time, everybody was very, very happy that, you know, okay, because Bhishma's vow is very popular. Bhishma means it is vow. It's very, very strong vow, and it is, he has taken that vow. It means he is going to finish, and war is going to, they were really very in ecstasy. So, but we know Lord Krishna is in the heart of everyone. Like we are discussing the verse today, the Paramatma is there in Duryodhana's heart, as well as Bhishma's heart, and Arjuna's heart, and everyone's heart. So then he knew that this is what has transpired, and then he suggests Arjuna, you please go to Duryodhana, because in those days it's very interesting, when the war takes place also, it is only up to from the sunrise to the sunset, you know, the time is fixed, and after that they used to go to each other's camp and they used to have very fun. There is no, you know, enmity or anything. It is only when the war is taking place. After that, they are friends. And if you go to enemy's camp and if you ask for something and you're treated like a guest actually. So it is so different, you know. It is today's war, if you see, it is the many bombs are falling in the night actually, when everybody is sleeping and this bombing is going on, and they have to accept the target, you're bombing all the other, you know, the civilians or whoever, you know, who is staying, and then so many destruction. At that time it was, you know, there's a lot of the principles were followed in this, in, you know, conducting the war also. So he said that then, you know, you have to, you go to Duryodhana's camp and there are five arrows. You just, you know, Duryodhana in the past he promised you that, you know, whatever you want you can, you know, you can ask certain things from me, you know, anything you want. And at that time he didn't ask for anything, and this is the time you can request him that, you know, five arrows, whatever you have, please give it to us. And then he go to his camp and he received him with respect and treated him very well. And then Arjuna asked for the five arrows. Duryodhana, can you please hand over these five arrows to me? And with that Kshatriya spirit, even though Duryodhana was, you know, we see so many negative qualities of Duryodhana. And but Duryodhana being a strong Kshatriya, and he handed over that five arrows. And the next day when it was discussed, and you know, Bhishma asked for these five arrows, and at that time Duryodhana said, and you know, it is already, I have given it to Arjuna. So, and then he said, you know, now it is difficult. But, you know, such powerful warriors who can, and after that the war continues, and then Bhishma takes another vow, saying that, you know, this, you know, he took the vow the previous day that he is going to kill all the five Pandavas, and he realized that it is only Krishna who can do this. And he took a vow that I am going to make this Krishna break his vow. Because he made me break my vow, so I will do that. So then the next day it was a very fierce fighting, very furious fighting between Arjuna and Bhishma. And just coming to the point that almost Arjuna was getting killed. At that time, Krishna just, you know, and it was, he come down from the chariot, and he was not having any arms in his hand. At that time, Bhishma didn't kill him, because again that conduct, because when anybody is not having the weapon, you cannot kill him, and he was following that. But when the critical situation was there, the Lord Krishna immediately took the wheel, and he was running, you know, to save Arjuna, to running towards Bhishma. At that time Bhishma said, okay, my mission is over, now you can kill me, no problem. Because, you know, he was a devotee. Bhishma Pitamaha was a Mahajan, and it is Lord Krishna's arrangement that to prove that, you know, whatever warrior, whatever powerful individual may be there on the other side, but one side Lord Krishna is there, then there is a success, there is a victory wherever Krishna is there. And we see in the Kauravas party there are so many powerful warriors, the, you know, the Dronacharya was there, he is the guru of all these warriors, the Pandavas and Kauravas, but still, because Krishna was there, like we can see the last verse of Bhagavad Gita, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Pato Dhanudara Tatra Sri Vijayoguti Dhruvani Matir Mama. So wherever Lord Krishna is there, and there is a victory. I think we are running out of time. So the conclusion is, we can see from the purport, the last line Prabhupada mentions, it is taking into account the next verses which is mentioned, which is pure devotional service. It is only the stages. It is from Virata Rupa to Paramatma realization to Bhagavan realization. So this is the sequence in which it is discussed. So ultimate objective is Krishna consciousness. It is the devotional service. That is what is necessary for our spiritual progress and to come out of the samsara of birth, death, old age and disease. Hare Krishna. There is any comments, any questions? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. You mentioned that as practicing devotees, we should always concentrate on the Bhagavan feature, because that is what is the ultimate truth. But for people who are new, I mean new to the devotional service, new to Krishna consciousness, isn't it also recommended that you start with the Paramatma, because it gives a lot of comfort that, you know, when you realize that Krishna is living in the heart. So if you start meditating on that, because that's also in a way a personal form, because he's in the 400 form. So with that realization, can also one can also progress and ultimately come to the pure devotional platform. This question I had, is that also possible to do, or one should directly come to the ultimate form, the personal form? That is the question I had.
Hare Krishna. Yeah. It's a nice question. So whether we can concentrate on the Paramatma feature, or whether we have to get into devotional service directly. So this concentration on the Paramatma, it is not very easy. If you see, the guidelines given for that is very stringent. You cannot concentrate on the Supreme Lord within the heart without following perfect celibacy. This is one of the basic conditions. Otherwise, okay, we can try out, maybe few seconds we may be able to concentrate, but it's very, very difficult. Particularly in this age of Kali. You know, we can see, you know, for different ages, different verses are suggested. Krite Jhayate Vishnu, that is in the, you know, Satya Yuga or Krita Yuga, it is the Dhyana on the Vishnu form. Jhayate Vishnu. Tretayam Yajatomake, in the Krita Yuga is Yajna Yagadis are suggested for elevating oneself. And Dwapare Paricharyayam, in the Dwapara Yuga it is the deity worship is recommended. And in Kali Yuga, Kali Tad Harikirtanam, it is chanting of the holy name, because it is the most simple process. If somebody can do, they can do that, no problem, because that is also one of the methods. So, but it is very, very difficult. Even we can experience when we are chanting the holy name, the sound is coming from our own lip and it is falling into our ear, but still our mind is going somewhere. So what will happen if you sit silently? So it is very difficult. And unless and until we go through process of yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, then comes. So that process, if somebody is able to follow, they can do that. But it is very complex process. Hare Krishna.
Then why this verse is saying concentrate on the super soul, but still
Maharaj Parikshit says in one of the verse, I think it is the 32nd verse or around that 32nd verse, in the coming verses, where he specifically mentioned, King Parikshit, what I am saying is Vedic version. This is what mentioned in the Vedas, I am telling you this, but the best is devotional service. You have to practice bhakti yoga. But he also, whatever is mentioned, he has to give the detailed account of that. Because everybody may not be like, probably asked, everybody may not be, you know, ready to take up this. They may think that, you know, some kind of meditation will, you know, is good for them. And many of the devotees have this experience also. They go through this process of some meditation, they find that, you know, they get frustrated and then they come to bhakti yoga. It's not that they achieved Paramatma realization and then they come to bhakti, but many people in the material world, in the current situation, it is they find that, you know, mind is going here and there, and okay, let me try something else. And then they get fixed up when they come to devotional service. Hardly you find cases wherein after coming to devotional service, people leaving and then getting into some other devotion, you know, some other meditation. And even if they are getting into that, I think they have not understood what is mentioned, the essence of the, you know, these scriptures. It is misguided intelligence. And so, you know, whatever is mentioned in the Vedas, he is just sequentially explaining that these are the three things. And but he emphasizes finally that it is bhakti yoga, that is what you have to. Even in the jnana yoga also, ultimately that is going to bring you to the bhakti yoga. Jnana yoga, dhyana yoga is bringing to the bhakti yoga. It is that is the final stage. So there is a, if we take only this individual verse with just translation, we may find that, you know, this is what is suggested. But we have to see the verses before and after and the situation. And then we understand the clear understanding of why this is said. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Just one question. You were saying, mentioning about partial surrendering. So what I used to always think is either you are surrendered or you are not surrendered, you know. So is there something like partial surrendering? I didn't understand that.
So words, what I mentioned, if I am not wrong, it is to the degree you surrender. So that, in other way, it is partial surrender, you can say. So, like, you know, when we start our devotional process, or whatever stage we are in, that we are not fully surrendered, you know, we have lot of material desires. It is not gone from our way of life, you know, we have not taken to Krishna consciousness fully. A few weeks ago we were discussing that whatever facilities we have, you know, that is to bring us to perform our devotional service properly. It should not be other way around. Like, you know, we have all the material activities, then also we do devotional service. Like, you know, it is suggested that we have to remember Krishna 24 hours a day. Satatam kirtayanto mam yadantascha dridavrataha. You know, and it is all time we have to remember, but how far we are able to remember and how much we have surrendered, to what degree we have surrendered. Yes, we have developed some taste for devotional service, we are doing something, but in a day of 24 hours, if we observe how many times we remember Krishna, or whether we are remembering Krishna all the time. If somebody is remembering Krishna all the time, he is a pure devotee. There is no question of partial for him. He is already a pure devotee. But for the practicing devotees, if you see practically, it takes some time, or it may take many births to come to that level. So this is what I referred as the partial surrender. Or not partial, it's basically to the degree we surrender whatever is mentioned. Hare Krishna. Because, you know, these words are, Prabhupada uses the words very, very carefully. So the degree we surrender and partial surrender may not be the same. Because Prabhupada uses specific word for specific situations. So because this English language is such that it is not easy to, you know, translate exactly what is given in the scriptures in Sanskrit language. Sanskrit language is a very rich language, whereas English is having a lot of limitations. So this word, so to the degree we surrender, and this particular statement I heard from my Guru Maharaj lectures, to the degree is, you know, to the degree we surrender is very, very frequently used word, or to the degree we are able to remember Krishna, or to the degree we are able to detach ourselves, from the material things. So this is how it is presented. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much, Prabhu. It's a very nice point.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. I just wanted to share one point regarding the God civilization and godless civilization. This I heard from Guru Maharaj last time when I visited Rajkot. Maharaj said that in his youth or the young days, there were these people called Tahsildars. I think many Indians know that Tahsildars. These are the people who go around the village or the place or the district place, see what they are lacking. Like the people are lacking anything, or how is the agricultural field, how are they growing on, and are there any limitations in that, or they are not able to cope up, something like that. They go around, check with them everything, and whatever taxes they have collected, they use best use to these people. So Maharaj said that this culture was God's civilization, whereas now at the present generation, there are three different types of taxes that they collect. One is the local people that they collect the taxes. The other thing is the state taxes that they collect in, and the central level they collect the taxes. But in spite of this collection or whatever they collect, they are still not able to, these leaders are not able to utilize the best use whatever they collect. So Maharaj said that this is the godless civilization. So nothing is there as such. These people, the political people are, as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, like they are blind and not competent enough to fully use whatever they have in the service of the people. Whereas in the other God civilization, they were capable enough and competent enough to use whatever resources they have in the welfare of the people. That's the God civilization. So Maharaj said this, just wanted to share, Prabhu. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, one question was going in mind throughout your lecture, when according to Shloka, you are saying that Supreme Soul is in each one's heart. If the Supreme Soul is in each one's heart, then why we are doing the sinful activity? Or if someone is doing a sinful activity like ourselves, how should we take it? Is it that Super Soul's must willingness, or how should we take that? If you are doing some wrong thing, is it according to his willingness?
The super soul and soul is compared to two birds in a tree. The soul is the bird which is, eating fruits, or trying to enjoy the fruits in that tree. And super soul is the bird which just observes and permits the individual soul or that other bird to eat. So in this particular verse where we discussed Upadrishta Anumanta. Upadrishta is the overseer. This is the role of super soul. He just oversees, and Anumanta permits. And how it permits? Depending on your karma. If you deserve, then only you can eat the fruit. Otherwise you cannot. So that aspect is controlled by super soul. You cannot do anything and everything without the permission of super soul. So super soul is the permitter and the overseer. That is the role of super soul in a living entity. And whatever we want to do this, do that, and these all propensities are with the individual soul, and which is mainly because of the influence of the three modes of material nature, that is sattva, raja, tamoguna. So these are taking us, bringing us different desires, and we want to do this, do that. And super soul is okay. Super soul is basically see whether you deserve this activity. Yes, if you deserve, yes, done. Otherwise, no. So that controlling aspect is super soul. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.